Welcome to the lucky 13th episode of the Reckless Dice Podcast, where we discuss Warhammer Fantasy Roleplay 3rd Edition. Tonight, it's just the co-founders of Reckless Dice. I'm your host, Paul Rorschach-Tobia, and also with me here tonight is Jesse Gitzman-Burke.
Hey, guys.
So we're going to do a quick episode here. We've got some news that we're going to start off with, and then we're just going to go right into questions, and we'll empty out the mailbags. So
what did happen to Dan and Lester? Was the Raging Canadian just out partying too much to celebrate our 4th of July?
Well, you know, Canada Day was Friday, so, you know.
Maybe he's still hungover from Friday. Yeah.
4th of July. And then Dan, you know, he actually, you know, he's out of college now, so he's gone completely irresponsible. So we'll see if he ever comes back.
You've kind of earned that after that long. You know, I don't know, he's probably in college for about 20 years, I think. So he reminds me of Tommy Boy, you know. So, what have you been up to?
You know, it's summertime. That's really what it is. So it has definitely become summertime. The weather's nice, more opportunities to go outside, but I have had, some opportunities to get some gaming in. Actually, this past weekend, our friend Neil, ran with Lester and I a quick run through his work that he's doing on Fantasy Grounds for Warhammer Fantasy Roleplay 3rd Edition.
I got a chance to get an intro with him, I think, maybe 2 weeks prior to that. What do you think of that?
I like it. It's definitely interesting. It's, I know we kind of talked about this before, and we've discussed this before when we talked about map tools. The idea of doing an RPG online, the idea of what does the tabletop represent, right? You need a dice roller. That's just the basics that you need for that kind of stuff. But what else you put on the table is really kind of a matter of preference, right? Do you play that you're expecting everybody to have your own set of gear? Like for Warhammer 3rd, you know, you've got your own action cards, you've got your own character sheet, all of those sorts of things for you, and then the GM has all the creature cards and creature actions and things like that. Or is that something that you want to put onto the table and have available with the programming to keep track of things like that? So it's kind of interesting to see. I think Neil's kind of working through exactly how much he wants to be able to put on the table versus how much he's relying on the individual users to keep track of.
I've been kind of curious, just as a quick clarification for those who aren't really familiar with Fantasy Grounds and map tools, which you probably heard several times during the podcast. Fantasy Grounds is an alternative to map tools where you kind of have a digital game board. I think it's called, the current version is Fantasy Grounds 2. And it's actually, unlike map tools, which is free, Fantasy Grounds is a pay for program. There's a couple different payment models. I think you can do, you can get like the everybody who wants to participate and link into the, have a connection has to own a version of Fantasy Grounds. Or alternatively, there's like an elite version or I can't remember the naming convention they use, but essentially it's kind of built for a gaming group where one guy, one GM has kind of the master edition who anybody else can link into, and they don't need to own an edition of it.
There's a version that you buy if you want to be a player. There's a version that you buy if you want to be a GM. And then there's the ultimate version, and the ultimate version allows you to be the GM, and it allows players to connect with the free version.
Yeah, and that's what Neil provided for us and walking through. So what Neil has done is there is no Warhammer Fantasy Roleplay plugin that you can just buy and download for this. But what he's done is he's taken it upon himself, similar to what I did with Map Tools, is he's working on building a structure for Fantasy Grounds. And I have to say, at first glance, Fantasy Grounds is, I mean, the price tag is an initial hurdle. But visually, it is very, very attractive. It actually looks like you're playing on some old, like, wooden tavern table, you know, where you have, like, your mug of ale and you have this great wood texture. It's got a really, really nice interface that seems to be very, very flexible, because he's taken a lot of effort to re-represent the rule systems and mechanics very faithfully within the Fantasy Grounds interface. I was really impressed.
Yeah, you actually roll the dice. So there's little animations for dice rolling. Now the custom dice for Warhammer isn't in there, but he has built the results into it. So he's mapped, you know, a D8, a 1 on a D8 is this, a 2 on a D8, mm-hmm. you know, that sort of stuff. So the results are the same, but you actually, you know, pick up the dice and you roll them in the chat box to roll. There's a lot of hyperlinking going on. So you look at your character sheet and you see the abilities that you have in the character sheet, like Melee Strike. You click on Melee Strike, it brings up the Melee Strike card, and then there's tabs along the side to show the conservative side versus the reckless side. So it is very slick and very, very, very good looking, very impressive. I think it's worth the money in terms of that, especially if you're using it for something else. So hopefully Neil will continue work on it and, you know, have something that he's, comfortable with releasing out to the public. Cause well, I know
he's invited us back, for a second round. Did you guys actually run a game? Cause when I was with him, we had, he had just kind of gotten the rule set to a presentable state where he wanted me to come in and kind of take a look at it. He showed me what he'd done. We ran through some like test examples and, we were kind of looking to point out holes that needed to be filled or kind of run through different play styles. But he hadn't actually run a game with it yet.
Yeah, he actually ran a quick adventure. We only had a couple hours on the weekend. So we actually ran a quick adventure with that, and it turned out really well. It was first time that Neil had actually GM'd Warhammer Fantasy III. So I thought he did an excellent job with that, and the Fantasy Grounds stuff was pretty cool. So
cool. So I know he'd invited us back to do more of it. So I'm hoping in the future, the next one we do, maybe we'll record that one for a live session, and I might even take a second shot at doing a screen capture recording of it at the same time, so we can maybe even provide some screenshots and things like that.
Cool. I think the other thing that we've been up to, so a couple weeks back we recorded a new character creation run through. So it was actually the three of us, you, myself, and Lester, mm-hmm. Rolled up some characters and we kind of talked about it. I think we've got about an hour's worth of podcast there of the three of us creating our characters. So
and that's kind of meant to take into account like new players, veteran players, the whole rule set. Everything from, you know, talking about your characters from a rules perspective, but also from a background and story perspective.
Yeah, and if you go back to the archive, one of the first non-episode pieces of content that we've put out was a character creation that we ran through. But this one's a little bit, you know, we're a little older, a little wiser, and it was the RDP team as opposed to the cool volunteers that you have.
I'm fully willing to let this one replace our first attempt at it.
Yeah, but still, I mean, it was a good crew that you had, and we appreciated the folks that were able to take their time to get on there. But,
absolutely.
Yeah.
But I think you guys, even if you have listened to that first one, I think there's a lot more meat and substance to this new one, and I think you'll find it to be pretty interesting.
Yeah, so I will say the cop out that I'm still editing that podcast, even though I'm not really editing it. I just have to get off my butt and actually get it posted. So we'll probably put it in between 13 and 14. So, be on the look for out that next week. Yeah.
Cool. Excellent.
What else?
Well, I've decided between our last episode and this episode in a non-Warhammer related event, I have joined, signed up for an event called Tough Mudder. And I'm really
Tough
thrilled
Mudder.
And excited about it.
What's that all about?
It is, I think Tough Mudder is the website. It's this like international event. It's this like endurance race. It's like a marathon mm-hmm. and an obstacle course mixed together where it's all, like meant to challenge you mentally and physically and, pretty much just kick your butt over the course of all these off-road obstacles, freezing water, fire, electric wires and teamwork and things like that. So
wow.
I've begun training. I'm now almost 2 weeks into my training. I'm not fit. I'm not unfit. I'm that something in between, and I'm hoping to be a lot fitter by the time mid-September rolls around.
Mid-September,
so you guys,
huh? That's
you guys
not
will
very
hear me,
far away.
No, it's not, but I'm thinking of sporting a Reckless Dice bandana or something for the event, and I will sponsor myself for the event.
Okay, so that's pretty cool.
So
well, good luck with that.
I'm sure I'll talk about it periodically on the, or put it up on Facebook or something, because I'm super excited about it. And it's one of those, like, once in a lifetime, you're a complete idiot for signing up for this type of thing.
All right. Well, so then we've got, let's see, mid-September. So we've probably got, what, another 5 or 6 episodes before you're dead then?
So when I start telling you guys about my Tough Mudder mishaps and injuries, I've already got 2. Mm-hmm.
I think you're just gonna die. Actually, you know, when you actually go out and do that thing, you'll fall into the fire pit, or the alligators will eat you, or something like that. So
when you run across the finish line, you run through a maze of wires, some of which have 100,000 volts running through them, or 10,000 volts running through them.
Yeah. See. So we'll be looking for a new host for Reckless Dice.
We'll sign a death waiver.
Yeah, we'll put up the post. So. Be on the lookout for that, folks.
Well, speaking of gauntlets, what Blackfire Pass is on the way?
Yeah, it's continuing to come up. Right now, it's listed in statuses on the boat. I know that we've got some folks that have commented on the site that they think it might be out in the next 2 weeks or something like that. But I'm pretty sure the interesting thing would be is that if it comes out before Gen Con, it'll probably either come out simultaneously with Gen Con.
And when is Gen Con again?
August, I believe. Late August. Mid to late August.
So you're thinking still a full month, if not a little bit more from now.
Well, if they release it before Gen Con, then what do they have at Gen Con that's special and unique?
Well, that's left in their, sifting through the shadows document is the teaser. I mean, after Blackfire Pass is the teaser of Slaanesh. I don't think there's anything else on their horizon. So I think they.
So I did a quick fact check, and Gen Con is August 4th through 7th. So it's actually a month away. So okay. I'm pretty sure it will either Blackfire Pass will either be a Gen Con exclusive and then in stores a week or two later, or simultaneously released. That sounds reasonable. Completely uneducated guess, but that's what I'd figure.
That sounds very reasonable, and that also would lend a little bit of credence to the hopes that we'll see another Sifting Through the Shadows type document or presentation at Gen Con, which is where they released last year's. Okay, cool. So hopefully we can start picking apart when halflings are going to join and when we get to see the Tomb Kings and all that kind of cool stuff.
And if anybody's going out to, Gen Con, please, see if Jay Little's doing a talk. Check it out. You know, be our reporter in the field. Hell, even come back and, join us on the podcast.
Absolutely. It'd be fun.
Because there's usually, it was a good couple weeks or almost a month before the Sifting Through Shadows wound up on the YouTubes and whatnot. So,
definitely.
Yep. All right. So I think we'll take a quick break, and then when we come back, we'll just run through all the questions in the mailbag and clean them out. So be back in a sec.
And we're back with a beefy section of our questions pool. We'll start it off with Michael, who emails in, just about to start running my first third edition campaign and got a couple of questions about the Zealot. Does the character get the insanity for free, like Order and Faith cards, or does it cost him a talent point? Additionally, he asks, if he gets the second insanity, can it swap out like a normal talent? He's actually got a couple points here. Let's try and hit him one at a time. First one's nice and easy. Yeah, he does get the insanity right off the bat, representing that he's insane to start with. It kind of sends him down that road. You agree with that?
Yeah. No, I'm doing a little fact check right now. So
cool. And if he gets a second insanity, can it swap out like a normal talent? Which brings up the question of when you have multiple insanities, what do you do with them? Are they all active at the same time? Do they socket like diseases? How does that work?
So insanities are active all the time, but the Zealot gets a specific bonus by having an insanity socketed. And actually, I think the Zealot can exhaust the insanity and get an even greater bonus. So insanities that you've acquired are in effect. but the zealot's ability to take his or her insanity and channel it into these special abilities is representative by which insanity you have socketed into the career sheet.
So I guess, are you able to then socket or swap out the insanities you have socketed at any given time?
Sure. But they're both still in effect, or they would all still be in effect. It's just whichever ones you want to put into your special abilities. So those two or more insanities are still affecting you all the time.
Right.
It's not that the one in your career sheet is the one that's active and the other one isn't being used like regular talents.
And do you recall offhand, because I'm not familiar with the zealot character intimately, what is the benefit that you get?
Don't know off the top of my head.
He also asked that do the insanities that you get count towards your maximum number of insanities that you can have?
Absolutely.
So, yeah, even though you're starting out with an insanity, yeah, that does apply towards your total insanity quantity.
Yeah, you're just going to go insane like everybody else.
You're just a little bit further along the road.
Yep.
And can the insanity be cured to leave it as an empty slot until he gets another insanity?
Yes, but then again, you can't use the special ability. So the career ability of the zealot is once per session, you can exhaust your insanity talent. So it's your insanity talent. So you got to have it slotted into the career sheet to add fortune dice equal to any check equal to the severity of the insanity. And then the insanity automatically refreshes at the end of the current act. So you kind of use up your insanity and you go lucid for a moment.
But mind you, the insanity is still in effect. It just gets,
I don't know. That's actually a good question. I would almost rule that it wouldn't be in effect while it's
exhausting.
While it's exhausting, while it's flipped over. Yeah.
Oh, interesting.
But that's just kind of what I would think about it. I don't know. I think that would be, you know, kind of interesting how you take, you know, you channel your insanity, you have that moment of lucidity, and then you fall back into insanity.
I guess that certainly makes sense. I think and I don't know the actual ruling on it, but I think that there seems to be a legitimate reason for rolling it either way. They both, from a role-playing perspective, make perfect sense.
Yeah.
Well, Michael also emails us in, I have a character who wants to run a high elf mage. But as this is the first time using magic, he's trying to swap the human race abilities for the high elf ones. So essentially there are no rules currently to really help facilitate a high elf or a wood elf mage. And everybody's kind of currently, you know, kind of faking away or house ruling away into it. So what he's asking is, It meets a bit of the fluff in Warhammer Fantasy Battles, where high elf wizards can learn any lore, but only cast from one in the battle. Also, he was thinking maybe the same for wood elves, being able to do life, beast, and maybe hedge magic. Do you have any thoughts on that? So basically, I think what he's boiling down to is, how do we make high elf mages or wood elf mages?
So from my personal perspective, I have a big concern about any kind of non-colleges of magic going into your game. And I call that the Jedi problem, right? And whenever you play Star Wars, any kind of Star Wars role-playing game, why wouldn't you play a Jedi? Because Jedis are better than everybody else, at least according to the movies, right?
Mm-hmm.
So how do you balance a Jedi? So whenever I see any house rules for high elf magic or even wood elf magic or stuff like that, it's always overpowered. And it's always, well, why would I ever want to take a human mage? You're less susceptible to corruption. You've got all of these extra abilities that you're able to take. There's nothing to balance it. There's nothing to put a starting high elf mage character on an even par with a bright wizard that just got out of the college, you know, that's an apprentice wizard. So myself personally, from my own experience and play, I'd never allow it in my game and I'd never want to play that. Now, if you want to do it, there are plenty of house rules out there. And I like the idea of putting in, you know, being able to choose your order or something like that. But again, you know, how many action cards does that give you to be able to use?
You know, maybe the high elf can choose a combination of orders, maybe a three orders that he can pick from. But what I was thinking, the part that I hadn't ever really considered, I'd certainly considered the option of having high elf mages, but I hadn't considered specifically how to address it in rules. And one of the things that you just said made me get an idea of the balancing issue you're talking about. Humans have the opportunity to cast some spells as an entry career. Entry careers exist that can cast spells, right? You know, the apprentice wizard, mm-hmm. things like that. Maybe the high elves, there are no entry level careers that allow it. Maybe the first career that allows, and this would probably tie in well with the story and the canon as well, because elves live a whole lot longer. I bet you they aren't introduced into becoming apprentice mages for a heck of a lot longer than humans are. So maybe it's a tier two, maybe even a tier three high elf career, that even allows introduction to magic, which would mean that, that same mage, who maybe does get all the benefits of potentially having every school of magic open to them, but that introduction to the magic does not exist until maybe tier two or three. Where then at the same time, that same human wizard will have been in a magic career for one or two careers. That might balance it out a little bit better. I haven't thought that fully through yet, but that sounds like it could make sense.
Yeah, it definitely, I mean, there's definitely a way around it, but really, you know, from my perception, and I know I'll kind of harp on this, you know, from my perception, the fluff says that high elf mages are super powered. You know, they're rare because most of them are hanging out in Ulthuan and keeping the vortex going and all that kind of stuff. But so, you know, the last time a high elf mage hung out in the Empire, he created the Colleges of Magic. So you're going to have some sort of high elf mage joining your first career party. It's just something's broken with that. And again, my own personal style.
That might also go back to, I mean, we're not trying to tell you how to, if somebody wants to be a high elf wizard and that's the only way they want to play, that's fine. But it may also maybe go back to our last episode where we were talking a bit about what kind of characters you want to be playing, and falling into those stereotypical role-playing archetypes are probably not the best places to go to when you're trying to have fun with Warhammer 3rd Edition.
Yep.
It's all the other ones that actually have the meat and substance to them. Being the, you know, stereotypical anything is probably the least interesting of your options.
I love random career creation, random race choice. You know, I'd rather choose my race, but I think random starting career is a wonderful thing for people to do in this game.
So I would suggest if someone really wants to be a high elf mage, I would certainly not allow that as an entry career, at a minimum second tier career. But I'm also very curious to see what the supplement that introduces more content to the high elves is going to have, because I'm almost certain high elf mages will get introduced into that. So we'll kind of have to see what happens there. If you guys have some other thoughts, though, feel free and email them in. I'd love to hear it.
Yep.
So we also have the Hip Hop Anonymous emailing in. Hey, they're just hoping you guys had some advice for the new Warhammer Fantasy 3rd Edition GM. All my players have been playing role-playing games in the past, my wife just once, but she enjoyed it, and now I'm introducing them to Warhammer 3rd Edition. Any advice on rules that often get overlooked, or even some suggestions for new players? Thanks. You guys have been a great place for info. Keep it up.
I like how you put that buttering up part in there so we'd make sure that we answer his question. So.
it seemed like a wonderfully innocent question that, you know, I mean, my first reaction was, I read it, I'm like, okay, go back and listen to every podcast episode. But at the same time, it's a lot of information to digest in a short period of time. And if you're really looking to get ramped up quickly, like what are your, kind of top three if you were to give advice to a new player?
Advice to a new player. I think, you know, to kind of repeat myself from previous episodes, I think that being able to have your character participate in the multiple phases of a role-playing game. So, you know, you need to be danger-worthy. You don't have to be a combat god, but you don't want to be the guy always hiding under the table anytime swords are drawn. You also need to be able to interact in social situations. So that's the flip side, right? You're not going to be the pit fighter that has a fellowship score of 1 and can't talk or is unwilling to engage other than, you know, bashing people over the head with his club. And then I think from the investigation standpoint of the game, you know, be willing to engage, be willing to be curious, ask questions, dig into stuff and get into it as much as you can.
I think one of the things that often gets overlooked is maybe not overlooked, but not on the forefront of all the players and GM's mind is I think they toy with it in the book a bit, is the concept of just saying yes. And what that translates into is more of a play style. It's not I want to jump across that roof and grab the gutter on the other side and pull myself up. And it's not the GM saying, oh, well, you can't do that because it's actually, you know, 25 feet away. It's too far to jump. Or you'll find a way to make what everybody wants to do at least possible and roll with it. Just make it happen. Find a way to keep everybody's thoughts engaged and not, don't ever tell somebody they can't do something. Provide alternatives. Provide help facilitate everybody's enjoyment of the game. And I think that's something that especially new players and players who are trying to adhere too closely to the rules, it's a big pitfall for them and ends up sapping the enjoyment for both the players and the GM.
Very good.
Any other great items of wisdom?
I think I'm wisdomed out.
Are you wisdomed out? So I have a question about items, specifically about weapons. And so I'm running a campaign, and I want to introduce magic weapons, and I don't know how to do it. I have this idea of weapons that scale with the PC, and I will implement it with the thief in a group. Also, I would like to ask, is the assassin career the progression of the thief, or is it a completely different career that progresses into the assassin? This guy still needs to buy the expansion, so he only has the starter box and a few other bits, and he says, thanks for the awesome podcast.
All right, so how do we want to tackle that? What order do we want to tackle those questions?
Well, I think does the thief transition into the assassin?
Nothing transitions into anything else.
There is a very select few that do have specific prerequisites, but the vast majority are, you know, if you've completed a basic career, you can then have the option of going into any other basic career or an advanced career.
And the assassin career does not require the completion of anything. It's just a regular advanced career. Now, the advanced combat urban specialist are the 4 traits of the assassin career. So completing the thief career might be easier and use less advances to get into the assassin career.
Mm-hmm.
But other than that, I mean, there really isn't that. That's one of the pretty big differences between second edition and third edition, let alone Warhammer from any other role-playing game, is that the ability for you to change careers is very, very easy. And you can wildly swing from one thing to another. I mean, you could go from a commoner to an assassin if you wanted to. Now, how does that work within your party?
You might not be a very good assassin.
Okay with that? Yeah, all that kind of stuff. But there really isn't the system is set up to really encourage people to go far and wide with their careers and pick out whatever goes with your character, whatever goes with your story, and whatever you want to try out.
So I'm very intrigued to talk a bit about the first part of his question, which was the his question about magic items and specifically magic items that scale with the PCs, so essentially saying that as the characters become more powerful, the magic item kind of grows in power with them. What are your initial thoughts on, maybe we can split that up into 2 parts. Let's take the scaling option first. How do you feel about magic items that scale with a character?
Sounds like chaos to me. Burn the heretic. I mean, I guess that kind of goes back to my, and again, personal preference. This is the way that I run it. I'm a pretty orthodox GM. Magic items in the Warhammer Fantasy Roleplay universe are very rare.
Very rare.
Yeah. You're not going to run into swords plus one or swords plus three or anything like that. There's never going to be a magic item that's going to be for sale in a store. Necessarily, and the magic items that you come across easily are probably chaos tainted and will corrupt your soul and body.
I think you've encompassed the concept there perfectly, which is if you're ever considering introducing a magic item, ask yourself, is it really necessary or warranted, or are you just trying to give the character something cool to carry around? But if you really want to introduce a magic item, I would suggest it not be particularly powerful or game-changing. The very subtle, small effects of magic items are what make them realistic and palatable. But if you want to add some significant benefits to a character, consider also adding some significant detriments at the same time. Have chaos influence it somehow, where, you know, maybe this thing makes you particularly this charming while you're wearing this amulet, but at the same time you're gaining extra corruption the longer you hold it, or there's certain types of I'm kind of making up as I go, but maybe you have something that, you know, it rubs certain people the wrong way after you're done with the conversation, where they have poor memories of you. I don't know. Just find a way to really make it have a benefit and a severe detriment, to make people really consider whether or not these things are worth using. Because any magic item that's worth being found has already been found, is in the possession of somebody who doesn't want to give it up.
Yeah, and again, it goes back to what you're willing to do. I mean, there's a lot of systems within D&D specifically, you know, where there's a lot of the more mechanics of things around threat levels and what are the appropriate levels of magic items for the level of character and things like that, and really matching the items to the person that's kind of there. And I think this might be where our questioner is going towards, you know, translating something like that.
I think a great quality sword is the equivalent of a Dungeons and Dragons plus one or plus two sword. It's that you get a white die whenever using that sword. You know, that those are the kind of things, if you want to give somebody something really nice, or they completed a great battle and they want to have some reward that's more than just some junk or a couple copper, you know, excellent quality weapons or armor, those are things that are very appropriate to hand out.
Yeah, absolutely.
Those are like mini magic items. So Aaron Zimdars emails in, "I'm looking for a bit of advice about casting spells and blessings outside of an encounter. One of my players is a bit of a min-maxer, and he plays an initiate of the Light Order. If I let him, he would be spamming spells the whole session. There are pretty specific rules on casting in encounter mode, but it seems like a lot more of a gray area outside of encounter mode. Do you have any suggestions on how often it would be appropriate to let him cast spells? Keep up the good work. Thanks."
So the mechanic that you can use around this is that when you're out of encounter mode and you're in story mode, a round is as long as you want it to be. So, you know, and I actually ran into this when I played with Neil and Lester over the weekend on the Fantasy Grounds. I actually took a Priest of Verena, and I was trying to cast Owl's Wisdom, and we were in story mode because I wanted some help with observation checks that I was trying to make, and it failed. So the question was, well, you know, when does the round come around again that I can try it again? Should I just keep rolling until I get to it?
Yeah, that's something I come across too when you're doing something like picking a lock. You know, okay, well, I failed. I'll hang around 10 more minutes and try again. I think it's definitely when you have a player who really has a tendency towards min-maxing, this is definitely much more of a problem. When you have somebody who just kind of rolls with the result and then begins looking for an alternative, like you can just try everything once per location, that tends to work a little bit better. Or if you're going to be trying something multiple times, I sometimes like to make a substantial amount of time pass, like maybe an hour, something that, that could potentially have some ramifications.
Right. And I think, you know, that's that whole idea of I'm going to try it again because there's nobody bearing down on me. That's encapsulated in the Dungeons & Dragons system as calling take a 20. Right. So you don't even have to roll. You just automatically get a 20. And if you're able to do it, you will be able to do it. I think, you know, taking some of the stuff from our last episode when we talked about acts and episodes, you know, perhaps you can only try once per act or maybe twice per act or something like that. You
know, it comes up a lot in healing, too.
Yeah.
You know, that was one of our topics from the last episode. And, you know, okay, well, I'll keep healing you until I roll a success. Okay, good. We did it. Let's move on.
Yeah. All of those sorts of things come into play. And unfortunately, there really isn't anything built into the system that takes that for granted. It's really going to have to be as a GM. You know, you keep it moving, you keep it flowing. You know, if you're going to have a character trying to cast a spell over in a corner, you know, keep everything else moving. Ostracize him. You know, he's over there fiddling with his magic. And then, you know, he starts to get weird looks by the other people in the bar, stuff like that, because he's continually muttering to himself. You know, there's...
Introduce some outside elements that begin adding pressure to the situation.
And again, you can always go to my favorite, you know, orcs kick in the door. And then you're in encounter mode, and it's all tracked for you, so...
Yeah, that's not a bad idea at all. Zrobot asks... For me, the system is a.
Take your time.
I'm gonna count ourselves back in since you're editing that out anyway.
That would be awesome.
I'll make a big loud noise so you can see it. Okay.
Just count it in. That's fine. Mm-hmm. If I've got a pause in the 3, 2, 1, that's
3, 2, 1. Zwobot asks. For me, the system is logical and great, but I have really big problems managing the social conflicts with the mechanics. Normally, I let my players play it out without initiative or rounds, but some action cards are less valuable if you take the social conflict out. What's your opinion on this?
Social conflicts, so encounter mode, actual social encounter modes are probably one of the hardest things to manage and put together.
So
for
let's give a couple examples of what one of these might be that where it's appropriate to use.
I think the traditional one is, you know, you're trying to convince a lord of something, or you're trying to convince somebody in a position of authority.
Yeah, or like a court battle or something
right.
Like that. Something that has a back and a forth that's not just a one-time thing.
Or even if, you know, and I'll spoil an eye for an eye here, you know, if at the dinner you're trying to convince a Schaffenberg that there's a cult, you know, in his manner.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that could very easily be a social encounter.
So one of the hardest things I find is when people are role playing it out and have no problem actually kind of first person talking through the conversations, and at what point in those do you begin introducing cards, because the role playing almost takes over and you don't need the cards. But at some point, like to his point, some of the cards then that are otherwise very good seem to get pushed to the side.
Yeah. So I think it's important. So there's kind of two different things. There's, do you use the cards and the abilities? And I think you should always take a look at where you can do that. And I think that, you need to set up those social engagements to talk about a particular goal. You know, what are you looking to accomplish? And then how is that going to be accomplished? So, you know, going back to convincing the person of authority. You know, one of the easiest ways to do that is you set up a progress track. And, you know, you make it 4 or 5 spaces long, and then every success that you get goes down that. And then you either do a race against time, or if you're conflicting with somebody else, you know, the faster they can get to 5 successes, they'll beat you.
Mm-hmm.
One of the important things about that is you never want to do, or you want to be very careful about doing a tug of war, progress track. You know, so if successes pull it to the left and then successes by the other guy pull it to the right, then you could potentially be there forever as you're just tugging back and forth.
I'm not a fan of those.
yeah, if you do a race, you know, first one to five and things like that, I think, you know, there's a better chance of getting it happening within a reasonable amount of time.
One of the things that I like to do is, actually, it's as a GM, it's their responsibility during a social conflict, if you want to engage some of the social dice mechanics of it, you really need to stop conversations periodically at key points and force a failure or success roll of some sort. You can't just resolve everything through the through talking. I mean, that certainly can be done, but if you're specifically looking to engage these social mechanics, you'll have to kind of create these milestones throughout a conversation where these roles need to take place.
Absolutely, and the people who aren't as willing to talk in the first person or engage around that, you know, using the cards can help with that as well. So instead of actually bluffing somebody, you know, you use your skullduggery or guile ability, you know, that's associated with a particular card.
Mm-hmm.
I think whether or not you leave it in story mode or bring it into encounter mode, again, the difference between story mode and encounter mode is that does timing matter? Does the order of things matter? Does the ability for everybody to go and then everybody goes again, should that matter? I think in a lot of cases it should, especially if you have that specific idea. You've got that specific goal that I want to convince the Lord that the goblins are on the march and they're coming in, but the vizier or the second in command guy says they're not. So I think that's a perfect idea because you've got a goal, you've got an opponent. So timing matters, right? How many times can I try to convince the Lord versus the bad guy convince the Lord? How many times can I socially attack the other guy and cut down his position and try and push forward my position? To that person of authority. I think that's a perfect point where you want to go into encounter mode, roll for initiative based on your fellowship, not your agility, and then you've got the order set up and your party can work together and the social cards come into play. I think it can be a lot of fun if you're willing to kind of find those points in the adventure that kind of stuff would come into play and be willing to go full on into that mode.
I'd suggest that if you are going to do a social encounter, plan it out ahead of time. I rarely find that social encounters work well when you're using the mechanics for it for pickup conversations, unless it's literally boiled down to like a haggle check or something to that effect. But if you're actually going to have a significant social encounter, it needs to be almost along the same scale or scope of a combat encounter. It's meant to take about that long. You're going to have a series of dice rolls, progress trackers, like you said. Actually put some significant thought into it and what the goals are of everybody, because they're very difficult if you just try and wing it.
Absolutely. If you're haggling for a sword, just run the haggle check. It is, if it forwards the story, if it forwards the plot, if the success or failure of it is a branching point in the adventure, then it deserves the time and effort to be a full-on social encounter.
Absolutely. Well, that wraps it up for our questions.
Cool. And I think that'll wrap it up for the podcast as well. So, again, we appreciate everybody who's been giving us feedback. Please continue to do so. You know, hit us up on email, recklessdice@gmail.com. You can follow us on Twitter @recklessdice, and we've still got our Facebook page out there. We still promise that we'll put more information out there. So
I think Reckless Dice was invited to the Google Plus beta.
Yeah, we'll see how that whole field trial stuff goes. That's a whole different podcast talking about social technology.
But hey, don't forget to plus one us then now, since that's available.
Yeah. But nobody else is on there yet.
So. No, that's actually just built into Google now. If you have a Google sign in, the plus ones are available throughout.
Have we actually posted anything that people could plus? Again,
every web page can be plus one.
Yeah, well, okay. So before we turn this into a technical podcast,
let's talk more SEO. SEO optimization.
Please give us please give us feedback on this, and let us know. Keep a lookout. Next week we'll send out our new character creation, and then we'll be back the week after that with our next episode. So thanks everybody for listening, and have a good night.
Have a great night, everyone.